The Spirit of Business is going live. Don't miss this next session to help you execute your private administration like a true boss. Administrate from this perspective of law, which can be very tricky because we live in an artificial world, a world that's largely artificial. So how do we balance that with our administration of law? Should we be looking at the law from a perspective that says, I'm a natural person? Okay, this is a terminology that we use quite often. I'm a natural person. So if I'm a natural person, I should be maintaining my privacy in that natural space from that natural perspective. Because as soon as I cross over to doing something that is artificial, or I cross over into something that does not obey the law of nature, then I reach a moral conflict and my belief system stops me from enacting or enforcing law in such a way, or administering law in such a way. All right, so the positive school. Okay, now I want to read two different definitions because I have two definitions that I think are significant. So the positive school is also called legal positivism. All right. So the positive school of thought, or it can also be called legal positivism. It says that the positivist philosophy believes in a formalized, static, or mathematical form of law. They believe that law is made by a sovereign who serves as the only source of its validity. Okay. The only source of the validity of the law is the sovereign person who issued the law or who administrates the law. Okay, whoever imposes both the law and its sanctions on the people while he himself is exempted from the law. This is the positive school or legal positivism. Okay, they presuppose that whenever the sovereign or sole authority lays down a rule or a law, it is insignificant whether the law advances the interests of the people or not, whether it is moral or not. Okay. And so in this other definition of legal positivism, it says the law is the command of a sovereign. Law is only law, in other words, if it comes from a recognized authority and can be enforced by that authority or sovereign. Okay. This is somebody who are they are suggesting that this can be somebody such as a king, a president, or a dictator who has power within a defined area or territory. Okay, positivism is a philosophical movement that claims the science provides the only knowledge precise enough to be worthwhile. But what are we to make of the social phenomena of laws? Did you hear that last sentence? What are we to make of the social phenomena of laws? Now, this is important, again, because on a macro scale, these are some of the schools of thought that exist in our world, okay? Obviously, legal positivism is something that we're dealing with right now, where we have one group of people claiming to be sovereign to the point where they are recognized as sovereigns because they are issuing and enforcing laws that bear upon other people, whether they are lawful or more, whether it serves the interest of the people or whether it's moral or not. They don't care. As long as they are the sovereign person who is exacting this law, then it becomes valid because they're recognized as valid, because they're recognized as authorities. So clearly this has a mental component to it that may even be a spiritual component to it, because if you perceive someone as an authority to a greater extent that you see yourself as an authority, then there should be a disconnect there, because you're looking at that person as a perceived authority and you're looking at them as sovereign. That perceived authority is because they are mistaken as sovereign, less your sovereignty. So in our situation, in our society, what you see in the large general, general reality is that most of people look at the police or the United States government or agencies, agents, representatives, office holders, officials, looking at those people and perceiving them as an authority is literally based on this school of thought, what makes them the authority. The simple thought that this person is able to tell me what to do, that is what makes them able. That's what gives them the enablement, okay, to be able to tell you what to do. The second that you claim yourself to be an authority and you establish a system of authority, then hence you become the authority in situations where you are now administrating or issuing this law, okay? Commanding the law, as this wording puts it. All right, so now we have the historical school. This is another macro school of thought, which we did cover in the podcast. This school of thought proposes that law is that which is made in accordance with the previous experiences of a particular people. That before a law is accepted, it must not be alien to the people for which it was made. Rather, it should be made from their history or past so as to mirror their interest. Okay, and once again, we see that word interest, because the way law is to be administered is based on the interest of a person. So you'll look at security interest, or you'll look at a secured party, or you'll look at like collateral, certain things like that on a lien statement. Those types of things are clearly trying to sort out where the interest lies, okay? Where is the interest? What is the weight of the interest? How should the interest be allocated? Who has title to the interest? Certain things like that. We're talking about interest in a thing. So whatever a person is interested in, there is the value. If you are disinterested, then that thing has no value to you. You understand? I think that might be how NFTs are created and maintain their values. Whatever a person is interested in it, that is where it maintains its value. So when we write our laws, that's one of the main things we're going to be looking at is interest. Okay. Even in the law of equity, we're talking about interest. Okay. And so in one of our future live broadcasts, we're going to be talking about interest on a deeper level. So I'm going to leave that for a future lesson. But I want you to make sure that you realize this goes as deep as your school of thought. Okay, it goes as deep as your school of thought. So you must remember that these things have a trickle down effect. Okay, it might seem like we're just talking a bunch of mumbo jumbo right now, but it does have a trickle down effect, because if you don't understand your school of thought, you won't know how to protect your interests. If you don't know how to protect your interests, you won't know how to argue equity or maintain honor. You won't know how to make a claim or get paid. You understand what I'm saying? It's a trickle down, baby. It's a trickle down, and you must honor it. Okay, you must pay attention to it, because like I said, this is going to be the thing that ends up in your pocket, if you understand how to administrate. All right, so the next school is a sociological school, and it says the law should be made or studied in accordance with what it does or its effect on the society. Now that would be, I believe, kind of more ideal in our situation, because we do have this socialized form of law where things become law based on the fears and or desires of a particular society. Whatever we want, we try to administrate the law based on our social or collective social ideas. We have these ideas. We want to enforce these things as law. So we end up legislating for those things. And we have to remember that it doesn't just affect one person. Okay. It doesn't just affect one person when you have a belief. This is something that you are going to impact on the rest of the body of law, the system of law, whoever's participating. That's how it gets. that's the impact that it has. So we have to be very careful about socializing the law, because at some point it starts to impact more than just the individual. Okay, so it goes on to say that a person named Roscoe Pound, which was very heavily involved in the sociological school of thought, this person proposed that law should be functional and that it should be liberal in such a sense that it should always be ready to accommodate the societal developmental changes. Okay, it says law should not just be a systemic or formalized rule that is imposed on people. And of course, that's self-explanatory. I don't think we need to go any deeper into that. So I want to move on to talking about these micro schools of thought, things that happen on a micro scale when we're attempting to learn about administrating law. Without knowledge of these presiding macro schools of thought, then we start slipping into these micro schools of thought that have less ability, or I should say they have less power when it comes to us enforcing these ideas. Okay, we already talked about how it might be beneficial to look at it from a macro perspective. So let's talk about some of these micro schools of thought. And this is really where the gold is, because I'm telling you what not to do at this point. I'm telling you, in your administration of law, this is what you should not really get caught up on, because there's much bigger fish. There are much bigger fish to fry.
All right, we're taking a brief pause for a shameless plug. I'm your host, Reese Roberts, and you're listening to The Spirit of Business. If you want that goal, please head over to patreon.com/learnadminlaw, where you'll have full access to our weekly live stream events and one-on-one mentorship subscriptions. Now, jump back in for our summary segment.
At the age of majority, so that I can consciously and intentionally express, okay, by my intent, the terms of this law, my command of law. All right. So with all those things being said, we have to, in summary, remember that our command of law as a sovereign can be only as strong as our school of thought and how we perceive the law itself. You can look at the law as something that guides your belief systems. I should not even say guiding it, but it realizes your belief system into something that is, you can actually walk it like you talk it. Excuse me for the cultural reference, but you can walk it like you talk it. Okay. And this is how you do that, by expressing the things that have been expressed over you. And like, for example, if you're writing a trust document, okay, and you're wondering what goes in here, your trust document can be it could be as extensive or as brief as you want, but the idea is to make sure that it is all inclusive of the things that you intend for your administration of the law, okay? Because if you're intending to offset debt, for example, your intention is to offset the debt, but how are you going to do that lawfully? You have to remember that when you are writing in things into your construction of law, they have to interface with other constitutions of law. So if you want to offset debt, how do you do that? First of all, what is the debt? What is offsetting? Okay. If you want to do that, you have to figure out what is the legal way to do it based on the other system that created it. And there you go. The system that created it says that I'm responsible for all your debts. Okay. I took away your gold standard. I have to pay your debts. So here's the way that you do that. And it is spelled out for you. But if you're looking at law from the wrong perspective, like, for example, not using codified references, not using codified, you know, study of the law, you're not going to be able to interface your administration. And more than likely, you'll never catch a remedy. You'll never catch a remedy like that, because you have to interface with somebody else's law. You have to let them know according to the structure of administration. And I want you to know that administrating law is the connection. That is how you interface. Remember, I said the interface is the connection. So if you look at the way, like the zipper, okay? So if you're administrating, the thing that you're doing is going to that administration with which you want to interface, and you find out what are their protocols. What are the protocols for interface? Okay, that means you have to study their code, figure out how do you write your code to interface with it so that everything you're doing is seamless. All you have to do is write the request for the debt to be offset, sign off on it, and they already know what to do. This is what offsetting debt looks like. It doesn't look like belligerent protesting, so to speak. You just making an argument in a letter, that's not going to get you nowhere. Making an argument in a letter is a love letter. I call it a love letter. If you're making an argument in a love letter, there's probably not going to be, you're not going to catch a remedy. Not going to catch a remedy like that. So, like I said, in closing, I'm just going to recap.
And that's going to be it for our latest episode of The Spirit of Business, where we give you a sneak peek into the lessons being taught in our brand new Patreon community, where we mentor private administrators. Again, I'm your host, Reese Roberts, and I hope to see you join our community at www.patreon.com/learnadminlaw for your mentorship subscription today.